Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. All right, my friends. So you have this new business, and if you've been following all the fantastic advice that you've been given on Life After Corporate with our step-by-step guides and our amazing guests, then you might be enjoying some real success in your business right now. And you might be wondering, how do I grow this thing sustainably and not lose my mind? And I'm laughing because I'm introducing you to one of my good friends, my mentor, someone who I greatly respect and admire and who makes me laugh every time we're together, Eleanor Beaton. And Eleanor, just to give you a little bit of backstory about her, and literally there are tears coming down my eyes because we were laughing so hard right before I hit record. Eleanor Beaton is the founder of Safi Media. She is on a mission to double the number of female founders who sustainably scale past seven figures in annual revenue by 2030. And Eleanor, welcome. I'm so excited to have this conversation today.
Oh, I'm so honored to be here with you, Deb.
Oh, wow. So this is a little bit selfish of me to invite you onto this broadcast at a time when, as I was saying before we hit record, that the bus is shaking and I'm feeling the wheels are going to fall off. And in my mind, I'm saying, you know, Deb, you really have to hire someone. And I know our listeners might not be quite there yet, but there are some very basic business foundations that they can be setting up right now that will help them greatly in the future. So first, before we get started, let's get some foundational understanding. Like, what's the difference between growing a business and scaling a business? Too often people are using those terms interchangeably and it just ain't so, right?
Totally, to our detriment sometimes. So typically when I'm thinking about a business, growth means that you're growing your revenues, but you're also growing your expenses commensurate to that. So you're not really any better off. And this is where so much burnout can happen. And it's a huge trap. And I know you do a ton of work with female founders around pricing appropriately and all of that kind of stuff to help them not get into this situation. But what happens is you're growing your company. Now you have more clients to serve. You have more stuff going on, but you don't have margin. You don't have margin of profit to be able to pay other people or reinvest to help you grow or handle the growth that you have, nor do you have time and mental white space to be able to sort of discern and figure out what's going on and what's a better way to handle things. So that's growth. Scale happens when your revenues outpace the growth of your expenses. And I make the distinction of sustainably scaling because I think, you know, when we think about entrepreneurial culture and sort of Silicon Valley culture and that bro culture of growth that so dominates the conversation around entrepreneurship in so many circles, there is a culture of scale there, which is also about burnout, which is also about major hustle. So when we talk about sustainably scaling, your revenues are growing in a way that outpaces your expenses. So you basically have more than enough of everything. You have more than enough time, you have more than enough revenue, you have more than enough profit. And this is kind of that sweet spot that so many of us live for.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, who doesn't want that?
Right.
And yet the hustle is real. And anyone who tells you different just is giving you a line of BS because there is so much hustle involved. And you can tell when you're stuck in that hustle grow phase when you have to schedule time to eat and pee.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yes.
And when you're developing content on weekends because you absolutely have no space and you're enjoying some revenue, but you're also thinking, I can't continue going on like this. And the thought of hiring someone is freaking frightening.
Yeah.
Right? Because then you're responsible for the care and feeding of someone else. So you have this, and like you said, you want to do it in a way that's in alignment with your feminine business values. You're not necessarily following the strategies of the bro marketers. So what are your thoughts about, you have this concept called a jewel business, which really intrigues me. And I'd love for you to share what you mean by that.
I have been in the place that you're talking about. And I can remember my calendar made me want to cry. You know, you become, this sounds so, it's like, I do understand that this is incredibly dramatic and privileged for me to say it this way, but you become a prisoner of your own success. You know, like I can totally remember my calendar made me want to cry. If my kids had, and I have two sons, this was when they were younger, if they had a sports game or something and I didn't have 3 weeks notice, I couldn't go because I couldn't clear up my calendar. I had help, but I was doing so many things. Like I felt like I was the brains driving so many different aspects of the business. And so it was physically demanding, but it was also like mentally draining. And I went through this great period of disillusionment because I was working so hard. And I was getting results and, you know, that was all good, but I didn't want to grow that. Like I literally, and for me, a big indicator that I have to sort of step back is when my ambition disappears. Mm. So when my ambition disappears, it's because the thing that I have is not actually something that I want to grow. So it's a sign that something is off. So I went through this period of disillusionment where I was like, why would I want to grow this? Because this isn't delivering. There's something off. I need to figure out what it is. And so what I did was kind of just take a step back. So I figured out what does continuity look like here? What are the most important things that I need to do to serve the clients that I have and to really, you know, to show up and be doing the minimum, you know, and keep things going, but get myself some time to reevaluate. And it was during this time that I discovered a book called The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist, which I love, you know, and it's all about the power of sufficiency. And so sufficiency, you know, in a scarcity-driven culture, it's like more is always better. And that's, you can never have enough. And that's just the way it is. And from a business perspective, I thought about how so much of what growth looks like in a typical business situation is more is better and there's never enough. And I thought about that and I was like, but that's just how it is, which is, you know, that's literally just how it is in business. Why would you ever want something to not be as big as it could humanly possibly be? So I really spent some time thinking about that. At the same time, in other parts of my life, I'm very involved in the venture capital sort of tech startup world. And in that world, the big goal is to be a unicorn.
Right.
And a unicorn is a business that has a $1 billion valuation. And I would go to conferences, talk about what I did, and they would write me off as a quote unquote lifestyle business.
Exactly.
And I was right. And I was like, no, there's something off here. And I really started thinking about what I wanted. I started thinking about the women founders that I was working with. And what I saw is that we really wanted three things. We wanted cash. We want influence, the ability to create change and have our voices heard and have an impact. And most importantly, for most of us, autonomy, freedom.
Yeah.
So I created a model of growth called the Jewel Business. And the Jewel Business is a company that grows at 30% or more per year in top line growth until such time as the founder intentionally chooses to accelerate or decelerate that rate of growth. It has a 30% profit margin. And that's a really important number because it allows you to continue to reinvest back in growth. So 30% or more. And it also allows the founder 30% open unscheduled time. And that is I hate to say it's our version of a unicorn business, but that to me is a really powerful promised land. And when we have something that we can articulate, it begins to be a different type of organizing principle to govern our growth.
Yeah, that's really fascinating and not so easy because as you were talking, I was thinking, well, yeah, I've grown more than 30% year over year. Do I have 30% of my time free on my calendar? Is my profitability at 30%? Probably pretty close, but it's the time that's the constraint right now.
Yeah.
You know, so how do you get there? Like, what were the sticky points? Like, how did you go from the hustle and grind to creating this jewel business? And what were some of the scary parts and sticky spots
that
you had to overcome?
I know. What haven't they been? So you made a point off the top, which I think is so key. And that is, it changes. So there, I think there is a difference between getting your business to a place where you have sort of takeoff velocity, meaning that initially in a business, you've got to get out and hunt and get something and drag it back to the cave for supper. Like, that literally is, there's no getting around that. There's no, so you need to be able to have a compelling offer, be able to, you know, build awareness around you and that offer, sell that offer, you know, so there's a ton of work that's going in. And to your point, I don't want to underrepresent how critical it is to be able to get your work to this takeoff point. Right. And so that's sort of, that's that case. So if you're in that zone, I think a lot of what we're going to be talking about is probably going to impact you a little bit later. But once you're at that point where you are officially sort of overworked as the CEO of your company, I think at that point, growth becomes so much more about what we release. It becomes about discernment, and it becomes about a level of focus that is unusual and often against our instincts. So for me, you know, when I think about getting to even my first $500,000 in revenue, it was a lot about saying yes to many different things. So if we think about kind of your growth stack, it was about saying yes to many different types of offerings. I was testing out a lot of things. I said yes to a lot of different types of, you know, I was still doing some consulting. I had a bunch of different types of coaching offers, programs, events. There were a lot of different things that I was sort of offering. So that was at the programming level. At the selling level, there were a number of different ways that you could buy from us. At the marketing level, there were a lot of different lead generation tactics that I was trying. I kept looking at all these different things that people were doing. And so that got me there. But you can see what you create is kind of this amoeba.
Yeah. You know, it's blowing complexity in that, you know, especially when you're trying all the things around marketing.
Yeah.
And you have a complex portfolio. It's really hard. So how still getting to $500,000 is fantastic. How did you survive though? I mean, that's just exhausting listening.
Oh God. Wine, muffin top, stress. Like, I mean, you know, it's so funny. Like when I look back at pictures of myself from that time, I see this woman who I love so much. Like, I just love her grit. I love, you know, her courage, but she has bags under her eyes. She is drinking a lot of wine. She is not exercising. She has back issues because she's sitting all the time. She is wounded. You know what I mean? She's wounded in the sense that you're out there, you're putting yourself out there, you're spread really thin, and you have this incredible toughness and chops and grit. But it's just, you know, I didn't have the time to really nourish myself. And I didn't have the time personally to discern, you know? So I think for me, it was about, and I don't think this has to be true of everybody, but I've always been a person where I can really embrace the sharp turn. And so for me, it was really like, okay, I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to do the minimum that I need to do here. And I'm going to reevaluate. And with great courage, I'm going to make some changes, you know? And so I can talk tactically, practically about what that looks like, but that sort of is from a conceptual level. That's what I did.
Yeah. And, you know, this can happen if you're with any business model, if you're a coach and you're coaching people one-on-one, if you're a consultant and you have a bespoke model where you're customizing your solutions to every client that you work with, or even if you've drank the Kool-Aid of all the marketing gurus and you have this leverage business, but you've got like four or five products in your portfolio and complexity in the marketing funnels, it's just like, how can you operate under that? So this is where, you know, picking a lane and simplifying is really extremely important, and getting yourself out of that customized delivery.
Totally. Because, you know, like, yeah, because the way that I started to see it, what I realized is that, because I think many, myself included, probably many of your listeners, we started a business because we have this technical skill. And so you take that technical skill and then you go and sell it in your customer or client's world. So I'm bringing my skills, they're portable, you know, and I'm taking them into a client's world. What do you need? Okay, great. I'm going to do this. And then you go and deliver it in their world. So you are trying to reach them in Mark Zuckerberg's world. You are selling to them, and then you're going and delivering the service in their world. You're never in your world. And that's what makes it so exhausting. And that's how it starts. The key to being able to reduce complexity for me and for so many women that I work with is about making this fundamental switch where I'm going to create a world that's clear, that's organized, that's set up so it suits me so that I can show up and my business can show up and be our best and serve people at this really high level. And here's what this is going to look like. So I'm going to be very clear about what I offer, and I'm going to exert tremendous discipline with myself not to continue customizing it for everyone who comes along, because I know that I can do that for a few people, but I can't do it for tons. And also, if I keep customizing for everyone, it makes it very difficult to hire people, because you started doing it because you have this zone of genius, but it could be hard to replicate that. And so if you can be focused, it allows people to come in and deliver this clear offering. So it really is about focus, discipline. It's scary because you will say no to revenue sometimes, and that can be really scary. But what I have found at the other side of it, you know, is that there's a lot of freedom.
Yeah. So you mentioned discernment, and I think that's key. So discernment in practice, what are some of the decisions aside from moving away from complexity and customizing everything? Mm-hmm. What are some of those other decisions? Like when you're at a point where you are in the midst of the hustle and you have grown and you've got this accelerated growth, then you have to let go of something.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be the CEO, and CEO doesn't mean chief execution officer.
Right? I know. We always get that wrong. We totally get that wrong. Oh my gosh.
It should be CDO, chief discernment officer, you know?
Yes.
So how do you, you know, number one is moving from the headspace of being the doer to being the executor of the operation, and what needs to happen, and how do you choose?
Yeah.
How do you choose what to let go of and what to bring on next?
So I've made a ton of mistakes around this. And so I'll share what I have done that has worked, and I'll share what I've done that hasn't worked. So for me, what has worked best is to, you know, I think my role and the role of any founder is, there's a few things, but one main thing is to create a really excellent customer experience. That's what it is. It's not so easy, you know, because you're literally obsessed with that customer from the time they hear about you, they haven't done business with you, straight through to the time that it's that relationship in that way is complete. It takes a ton of focus and discipline. So when I started realizing just how much discipline it took to create an excellent customer experience, that number one can really help with discernment. So for example, and when you talk about making choices, right? So let's say, you know, in my business, it was focused very much on working with service-based founders, but there's a big difference between somebody who is making their first $60,000 and someone who's making $200,000. You know, and so that was one decision of just being very, very clear that this was not for startups and that it was really important that you're at this certain place. And so that means that your marketing starts to alienate people, it starts to repel people, and then it starts to attract certain people, but that allows for a more focused, cogent customer experience if they are all at sort of the same stage of development. So this is kind of like more of an advanced niching thing. Yeah. So that would be one example. When it came to kind of building team, the mistakes that I made early on. So very initially, it was easy because I basically hired like an assistant, you know, to do administrative tasks. And that was great. As I started growing, I don't know if you can relate to this. Sometimes, you know, when you start growing, it gets exciting and you're excited and you just want more.
Yeah.
So, right? You're just like, oh, this is amazing.
And let's double again.
That's right. And so what do we do? So basically, this is where great empires start to crumble.
Yes.
In history, everywhere, you overreach. And so what was happening is, rather than being patient and bringing in people to do things we were already doing, that we're taking, I hired people to do things we weren't already doing. So I was hiring them to figure out how to do stuff, because that's what you learn in kind of the corporate world, where you're working inside very defined structures, much more so than an entrepreneurial structure. And what I realized is that for me as a leader in an entrepreneurial structure, at least then, what was so much more important is that I get very clear about exactly what we did, exactly the activities that I was doing that I shouldn't be doing, and hire people to do that to free up my capacity versus try to build capacity in the company by doing things we weren't already doing. Now, I'm doing a couple of hires now for things that are adding capacity, but we have the kind of underpinning to do it much better than we did 2 or 3 years ago. So I hope that's helpful. Like, really, really, those early hires are to help you do stuff you're already doing well. You know, it's just not your sort of genius zone. That was a big mistake that I made.
Yeah. And, you know, being clear on your business processes. And for some of us, and me included, who tend to be more on the creative side, you know, documenting processes is not something that really gets me out of bed in the morning and right. super excited about starting my day. But, you know, hiring, you know, so your first hire might be a virtual assistant or someone to take on social media. But then if you are product development, if you're also marketing, if your sales and your customer delivery, as you begin to scale your business past 200 or 300,000 or 500,000, it doesn't work. You have to decide, you know, what am I going to keep? What am I super good at that I need to own? And what am I going to let go of? And that's a hard decision sometimes, you know?
It is.
Sales? Is it customer support? What is it?
Totally. And it is, because oversight is required. Yes. Like, oversight is required. The devil and God are in the details, you know? And I don't think that a lot of entrepreneurs grasp that after a certain point of scale, because earlier in your business development, the business is small enough that you can grasp all of the details, no problem. But as it's growing, you have to still understand which details do I need to grasp and which can I hand off. So here's an example of something like a mistake that I made. So one mistake was, so let's talk about sales. You know, that's a thing that so many entrepreneurs are doing. So initially what I did was I was like, okay, so we are a conversation sales company, meaning that we want to vet everybody who comes into our programs, because your success, if you're a coach or consultant, your success is all about the caliber of the people that you work with, quite frankly. So
yes,
we have to make sure that they're good, because why wouldn't you coach LeBron James if you had the chance to coach LeBron James? So that's kind of how I look at it, you know? So we were a conversation sales company. And so initially what we did was just outsource that whole thing. Great. You're a great salesperson. Here's our programming. Here's how it works. Here's some examples of me doing a sales call. Go to it. And what I realized is that I was outsourcing a sales process that actually had like 4 or 5 steps, rather than taking the time to really step back, lay out all those different steps of the sales process, and gradually bring people in until the very last, which is closing, which should have been the last thing that I outsourced. But I outsourced it along with this whole group of things. We were actively alienating sales.
Ooh.
Time, right? Because the amount of oversight, again, and time. So when you're bringing somebody in to do all of that, you have to pay attention to, let's think about all of their email exchanges, all of their sales calls, all of their follow-ups. That is tons of time that as the founder, you already don't have time to do. So when you break up the process, first you're going to be a setter. So your job is to connect and set appointments, you know, and provide. So that's one piece. Give them that for 90 days. And then it's like just sort of breaking up the pieces of the sales process. So I am much more likely to do that now, like just to be more patient. And again, it's a reason why that focus is so important, because it allows us to break up the processes and have the time and energy to be able to do that. You can't do that when you're selling.
Yeah. No, you can't. Right. And it's a great, great point. And now sales is so complex. You know, we have this, you know, concept of social selling and engaging people in chat. And that's like asking someone to be you, pretend to be you.
Yeah, totally. Yes.
Or not say, you know, I'm from Eleanor's team or I'm from Deb's team, you know, love to get to know you and all of that good stuff. So I was a member of your incubator program for a year, which was really great. And it's true, the caliber of the women that you brought together. I mean, still my friends and colleagues today, it was really great. Consider you just an incredible mentor and inspiration. Love your podcast, Power, Presence, and Position. In fact, it's required listening for all of my clients. And I know a couple of them have hopped into some of your programs. And, you know, it's a great place to land after, you know, the Launch Lab or the Accelerator, where you've built up that first 100, 200,000, and now you're ready to scale. So we really bookend each other.
Yeah, totally.
Well, tell us some stories. What are some of the successes that your clients have had in the incubator or through Power, Presence, Position?
Yes.
What is the value that they get when they work with you?
So, yeah, I mean, so I'll start with Power, Presence, Position. So that program is really all about, it's kind of the foundation of niche. So what we were talking about, so typically you get into the stage where you're a prisoner of your success, And so you're a prisoner. So you have a niche, like you have a market, you have some offerings and all that kind of thing, but they're not as focused as they need to be in order to scale. And so what happens is there's a few things that start happening there. You have success communicating to a warm market, but to communicate to a cold market, you have to be so clear because every little piece of confusion that you have in your messaging gets amplified to a cold market. You've lost them. So Power, Presence, Position is where we really hammer down on getting the level of clarity in your niche message and the way you're presenting your offerings to be able to scale. So our clients there, so we really study our clients. So close to 70% of those clients will make their money back in the program by the time they graduate. And it's an 8-week program and it's really not a sales program. So that's pretty cool. And then many will go on after, you know, in the months, anywhere from 3 to 6 to 8 months after, to get anywhere from an 8 to 12x return. And then, for instance, one of our clients who's now in the incubator, she did Power, Presence, Position. Her revenues were at about 150. And then in less than a year, in about 10 months, they were up to 330. And she credits at least 150 of that to what she learned, you know, in Power, Presence, Position. And that's just the power of having something so focused that you actually want to scale it.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Like, right? It's key.
Yeah.
And then in the incubator, that's where our focus is building a 7-figure ecosystem. I really think it is all about the ecosystem. So we really study our clients there too. So we know that 2% of women-owned businesses, not female-founded, women-owned, which is there's a difference. 2% of women-owned businesses scale past $1 million. And inside our program, we have 13% of our clients scale past $1 million within 24 months of starting the program. So pretty good, you know?
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, and I think that kind of, we're research nerds a little bit. And so really kind of taking a look at how they're doing. But the stories, you know, I can remember I was talking to one of our clients recently and she had a business that was doing around 300,000. She was very stressed, very unfocused, working a ton, wanted to quit her business. And because you know, I mean, it's just like, it's exhausting and she knows she wouldn't, but she kind of felt like it. And so it became about, like, I think when you're in a container that is about sufficiency, you know, that it's not growth at all costs, but how about we focus on more than enough and see where that gets you? And so really putting in the infrastructural pieces to be able to scale. She's at $1 million now, you know, a year later, she's at $1 million in revenue, which has been amazing. Hired a full-time team member, has a ton of money in the bank, but she, like, it's about being grounded and centered, you know, for her, which I think is huge. So those are the kind of stories, you know, that warm my heart. basically.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you deliver solid advice. And that's why I respect you. You know, there's no BS in what you offer. And your weekly emails are a delight to read. I open every single one of them. If you have stats on me, I have 100% open rate on Eleanor Beaton.
There'd probably be like all the flames by your name and Infusionsoft, like, this is a person.
Yeah. All the flames. Right. Exactly. Exactly. I'm a five flamer, you know, and that was something that I learned from you, which was how to entertain and engage your audience because they are getting to know you and to express your values. And when you're expressing your values, and you don't get to grow a business without being seen and heard. So whether video is your thing or not your thing, or writing is your thing or not your thing, you have to find a thing that you can commit to and be consistent because your audience is watching. You know, they're watching you. If you're not consistent, then they will know that. I mean, you're super consistent. You have more than 400 episodes in Power Presence Position, your podcast. And so you inspired me. Actually, we launched Life After Corporate while I was in the incubator. And I remember that conversation where we were talking about naming it. And you're like something like quitting corporate. And I was like, no, Life After Corporate. And we were like, nail it.
That's it. I know. Those moments are so much fun. Yeah.
And it's so super important that you have a mentor, that you have a someone who's guiding you on this journey. And I personally love a cohort. I need to have other smart women who share my values, who are growing a business. And so that was the experience that I got to have through you. So what is the best way for our listeners to keep in touch with you, aside from the podcast, which we've mentioned a few times?
Oh, I love that. Yeah. So there's the podcast. I think something that could be really cool for them that they might enjoy is it's a short free course that we created called Your Selling DNA. And this was huge because I can remember like when I had a consulting business and I did great business, closed tons of sales, didn't even really think about it. I would basically talk to somebody and then do a proposal and had great close rates. And then I moved into the online world and I was like, oh, you have to do this. Basically divorced myself from a lot of my natural selling instincts without kind of realizing it in order to build up skills that were amazing. But for me, it's always been about, you know, my biggest growth has come from remembering who I am, you know, and just connect and then finding a way to sort of connect that. So you can go to yoursellingdna.com. It's a simple quiz and it really sort of lays out, look, here are your natural persuasion powers. And if this is where you stand, here are some great places that could be really useful to you to think about as a selling strategy. It doesn't mean not to build your skills with webinars, with live streams, but it just allows you to stay really anchored to what your natural selling DNA is. So that could be really helpful.
That's beautiful because selling is a place where a lot of new women entrepreneurs get super stuck.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable in the sales conversation. I don't like to sell. Those are some of the things that you're saying. And I always say, if you don't like to sell, get over it.
Yeah.
Hire someone else to do it or go back and get a job.
Yeah, 100%.
Nothing's going to happen if you're not selling. And we're selling all the time. We're always dropping a little nugget of how we could work together. So, Eleanor, this has been super fun for me. I've really missed you. I've missed hanging out with you on a regular basis. And so it was great to not only reconnect, but share you with the Life After Corporate community. So thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a great honor. Thank you, Deb.
Well, that's it for now, my friends. Stay tuned for more about how to be the CEO that you want to be in growing and scaling your business in future episodes. And we'll see you real soon. Bye. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.